This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, here we go. 6:12, Monday morning, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, but I think that's cliche. Instead, I'm going to go with, since yesterday was May the 4th and May the 4th be with you, I'm going to make today May the 5th be with you. May the 5th be with you, and you can make it a 5th or whatever you want. Dry, pleasant today, but the storm chances ramp up. According to Peyton Malone, WWL Louisiana forecaster, Tuesday through Thursday, bringing the risk for heavy rain and street flooding. So be aware of that. Not that there's really anything you can do about it, but just, I guess, keep in the back of your mind. Nice today, highs of 82, sunny, less humid. Then tomorrow and through Thursday, a chance for showers, primarily Wednesday and Thursday. But I'm not sure that they have a handle on this, so it might rain hard, and when it does, the streets could flood. That's a hell of a thing to tell you, but I think that's about where we stand. Brian Taylor joins us now, our friend, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. His most recent book is Russia Politics, A Very Short Introduction. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay. So tell me about the book. That intrigues me, the title.
The book is part of a series that Oxford University Press puts out called Very Short Introductions, and there's a very short introduction to pretty much anything your listeners might want, from rock and roll to black holes to Shakespeare to whatever, and so I was asked to write the very short introduction to Russian politics. So it's a tiny little book. If you want a physical copy, it'll fit in your pocket. Lots of people I know read them on other platforms, but it tries to be an introduction to someone who wants to know more about Russia and Russian politics, but is kind of new to the topic.
I love that idea because I always like to learn about stuff, and life is not a picture, right? It's a still photograph. It's a motion picture of where we came from and how we got here. How did Russian politics and the U.S. specifically relations get to where they are today? If you can kind of give me a little thumbnail on it, Professor?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long story, obviously, but to get to the heart of it, there have been a variety of efforts since the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991 to try and remake the U.S.-Russia relationship. There was a lot of hope when the Cold War ended that, you know, peace would break out and we would all get along and all of those sorts of things. Obviously, a lot has happened since then, and it hasn't worked out that way, and from my point of view, the thing that has broken the relationship most of all has been the Russian war against Ukraine, which started in 2014 when Russia annexed through military force the territory of Crimea. And then, of course, three plus years ago, it launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Now, one could step back and say there were things the U.S. did that also annoyed the Russians, and that's certainly true, but launching the biggest war in Europe since World War II certainly changed the tenor of the relationship between Russia and the U.S. and the West in general.
So when it comes to Crimea and Vladimir Putin in 2014, right? I think I got my year right, annexing Crimea. Gorbachev would never have done that under Reagan, right? So what changed with the relationship where Putin felt empowered to do that? Because part of breaking up the Soviet Union, Crimea was part of breaking up the Soviet Union with Reagan and Gorbachev. Correct me if I just said something to hurt myself. I don't mean to, Professor.
Well, when the Soviet Union fell apart in 1991, it broke into 15 new states, two of which were Russia and Ukraine, but there were others as well that your listeners will have heard of, from Estonia to Georgia to Kazakhstan to whatever. Mm-hmm. But according to the boundaries that existed at the time, Crimea was part of Ukraine. And so those were its legitimate international boundaries. But some Russians, including Putin, felt that that wasn't fair and thought that Crimea should be given to Russia instead of to Ukraine. I don't think there's any legitimacy in that view under international law. They would point to some things in history, but, history tells us lots of things. But the way the world order tends to work now is the borders on the map that are agreed to by the UN and by other countries are the ones we try and live by. Otherwise, it would create chaos. So I think the question of why Putin felt emboldened in 2014 to do what he did is...
going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Simply that Ukraine at the time was relatively weak. It was outside any alliances, and Putin felt that he'd been distrusted and mistreated. And I think this was kind of an emotional reaction to a revolution that took place in Ukraine that changed the government from a pro-Russian one to a pro-Western one, and that's what ultimately precipitated his annexation of Crimea. And
so,
it started the war that we're sort of still seeing today in its first form.
All right, so Barack Obama was president then. What options did he have, either as the United States alone or with the UN? What could have been done at that point? And if anything had, what would have been the Russian response? And would we be where we are today?
Yeah, some things were done. I mean, the most obvious were a series of sanctions were put in place by the U.S. and its European allies on Russian finance and arms industry and energy industry, and it was condemned by the United Nations General Assembly. But no one felt like the U.S. or any other countries were in a position to go to war over this, and in fact, Ukraine at the time didn't even have the military wherewithal to try and resist very much when this happened in February 2014. It was only after Russia sort of expanded its operations in the southeastern part of Ukraine, an area that we know as the Donbas, that the war that started in 2014 sort of broke out. So what else could Obama have done? I think probably the main problem was there was a bit more of a return to business as usual than there should have been. And maybe more could have done to prepare Ukraine for what happened in 2022. Although the Obama administration and the first Trump administration would say, well, we did some things to help Ukraine get stronger. We did a lot of military training with Ukraine. Under President Trump in the first term, a decision was made to provide these anti-tank missiles called Javelins. So there were some things that were done. And if we look at how Ukraine did when Russia invaded in 2022, it did much better, obviously. And although Putin thought he was going to march into Kyiv and take it over in a couple of weeks, here we are more than 3 years later, and they've haven't moved that far in the last 2.5 years.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Brian Taylor, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs, Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Most recent book, Russian Politics, a very short introduction. It's part of the, had it right in front of me here, a series of book, very short introductions as the computer screen refreshes and screws me over. But I'll tell you about it later. 620 traffic now, WWL.
I'll be buying one of them books from the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center. I'm Joe Cardosi. The Bonnie Carey Spillway has no delays as you head in from Laplace. I-10 is also free and clear between Kenner and Metairie, and the causeway is looking good to and from the North Shore. No delays across the Twin Spans as you head in from Slidell, and smooth sailing through the Morrison Curve and across the high rise as well. As you head downtown from the east on I-10, you're moving fine all the way through the Claiborne flyover. The Pontchartrain Expressway is also free and clear as you head toward the CBD. Moving in from the West Bank, smooth sailing across the Crescent City connection, and you're seeing no delays in either direction across the Huey P. This morning's traffic is brought to you by Terminix.
626, Tommy Tucker, WWL. It's Very Short Introductions, a book series published by the Oxford University Press. Brian Taylor, our guest director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University, wrote Russian Politics, a Very Short Introduction. Professor, so, you know, the last time Zelensky, the head of Ukraine, and Trump met in the Oval Office, it was ugly. Then they met again last week, as I understand it, at Pope Francis's funeral. What is the latest on ending the war in Ukraine? And I guess maybe first off, we should say, what is the status of the war in Ukraine right now? Everybody still bombing each other?
Yeah, the war goes on as it has for 3+ years now. In fact, in some ways, Russian attacks on cities in Ukraine have increased over the past few months while these negotiations have been going on. So there's no real change in terms of the war, no major change. The fighting goes on every day. There's been a lot of talk, as your listeners know, about a possible ceasefire, and there were times when it looked like they might be close to some type of at least partial ceasefire, but none of that has taken place. And so, you know, we're well past the 24 hours President Trump said he would need to end the war. Or more recently, they were talking about a settlement by Easter or by the first 100 days. And we're past all those barriers now. So I think the real question is what's going to happen over the coming sort of month or so? And is the U.S. eventually going to walk away? But you're right to point out that the relationship between President Trump and President Zelensky looks a bit better than it did than in that famous Oval Office meeting at the end of February.
So when it comes to options, be it the United States or the world, if Russia says, no, we're going to keep if Russia can keep fighting Ukraine, do they have unlimited resources or are they about out as well as Ukraine? Ukraine's being propped up by the United States. Russia's in it alone, or is China helping them, Professor?
So Russia does have the wherewithal to continue, at least for a while, I would say. They're not running out of men or money or military equipment yet. It is correct, as you note, that they get some help from a variety of countries. From China, it's mostly that China buys a lot of Russian oil, and they provide a lot of dual-use technologies that Russia can use to make weapons. Probably the biggest outside supporter is actually North Korea, which sent 12,000 troops to fight in the war and also provides as much as half of their artillery that Russia is using at the front lines. So Russia has a few supporters. Ukraine has a lot more supporters, not only the United States, but the entire NATO alliance and some other countries around the world that have been providing military assistance and economic assistance. But of course, Ukraine's a smaller country than Russia's, so this outside assistance is probably more important for Ukraine than the assistance Russia gets, although it's important on both sides. But
let me give you my biggest.
So far,
I'm sorry, Professor. Just my biggest fear in the minute that we have left is that Russia decides to either continue what they're doing in Ukraine or even advance and try to reclaim some more of the old Soviet Union. China backs them and they stand fast and they say, you know what? You want to go nuclear war? Let's go nuclear war. At what point does the United States say, well, we're not going to do that. That's crazy. And do China and Russia get to do whatever they want? Or are China and Russia that aligned against, could they be that aligned against the United States?
At the moment, they're not that aligned where I could imagine Russia and China sort of entering into a war with the U.S. or any other target together. I mean, they're so-called partners, but they're not military allies. So I would not expect that. I do think that we're still a long ways away from a settlement, unfortunately. Vladimir Putin isn't really interested in a deal. He's interested in what he would define as victory, which is the subjugation of Ukraine to Russian control. And your listeners probably remember Senator Kennedy said a few days ago that Putin has jacked around our president on every opportunity. And he suggested putting more pressure on Russia by making it harder for them to sell their oil, which I think would be a good thing for the U.S. to do at this point.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time and your insight. We'll take a break, come back, talk about trade deficits right now. Time for WWL First News.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Podcasting isn't just evolving, it's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.